have experienced a lot of growth in the almost 2 years of doing this podcast. I am not the same person I was before, and I'm definitely not the same person I was when I tried to make my very first podcast. These stories and lessons I've heard and retold to you on this show have changed me. Each episode gives me a new perspective on whatever obstacle I'm facing in life. All these lessons, combined with all of my past experiences, has led me to where I am today, talking to all of you in this microphone, about to tell you another artist's story. And if it's one thing that I've learned from his story, is that one must adapt to the changes around them in order to find success and bring their dreams to life. I'm your host, Jacob Johnson. This is the My Artist World podcast, a narrative journey into the lives that shape art. Today's episode, Sean Mundy. Right after the break. This podcast is fully independent and wouldn't be possible without the support of you, the listener. I've been hard at work to offer you a unique My Artist Reel way to support the show, and that is through limited edition print releases with previous guests and fellow artist friends. All of these prints are made in studio by me and shipped right to you, with all funds going to support and improve the show as well as help the artist. All prints are available on MyArtistReel.com. We just released two prints, one with artist Lee Salvador and one with Joshua Mizusawa, and we got plenty more in the works. You can also sign up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MyArtistReel. All right, back to the episode.
My name is Sean Mundy. I'm from Montreal, Canada, and I'm a photographer and digital artist. Did you want like a full, I'm trying to think of...
No, that's good, man. It don't have to be anything fancy.
Cool.
There's got to be something creative in the water that's in Montreal, because believe it or not, this is the seventh guest who is from Canada and one of the many that's from Montreal specifically. So you've lived your whole life in Montreal, correct?
Yeah, I grew up in Montreal, the southwest area of Montreal. Been here my whole life. I could see myself moving somewhere else one day, but it's home for now. My family's here, my friends here. For photos especially, it's nice having familiar territory and having people at the ready to help you, especially for photo shoots.
But Sean wasn't just a city boy. He spent plenty of time out in the country.
I had the perfect balance of like city and country upbringing. So I spent my weeks here in Montreal and like really in the city, like 10 minutes from downtown, but still in a smaller area called Verdun. But then on weekends, my parents had a cottage, this little small like two bedroom cottage. And up there is like in a small town of 10,000 people. And at the time it was probably like 5,000 people. So I'd spend my summers and weekends like surrounded by like forests and riding my bike and lakes and fireworks and bonfires at night and stuff. So I had like the perfect upbringing in terms of like being in the city and also having the opportunity to leave the city when I needed to. But also it was a very artistic city too, which is cool. And I've come to appreciate it a lot more as I got older. I think a long time ago, I've been asked like, oh, how has Montreal like inspired your work? And back in the day, I didn't really see it. But now like I'll look at certain architecture or even just the seasons and how like dreary and bleak that winters are here. Like that, I would be surprised if that didn't have some kind of an impact on why I'm drawn towards like bleaker imagery and things like that, or even just the architecture, because there's a lot of parts of the city that are quite brutalist, and I love that kind of architecture. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's some kind of subconscious inspiration going on there.
And where do you think you had the most fun growing up, the city or the countryside?
A lot more of my core memories are outside of the city, whereas the city is kind of just where you had to be, because I went to school in town, and when I started getting jobs, they were always in town. So I felt more at home up north, but the city was where home was. So that's why even now, like to this day, I still love shooting in nature. And a lot of the locations that I shoot at are in that small town that I spend my weekends and summers in. So I gravitate towards both of them. I definitely love like the bleak concrete, but also there's something really nice about working in nature and good excuse to get outside.
You know, I've said many times to all of you about all the fun I've had growing up in the country as a kid, but you know, I'm always curious to see what others experienced and if there's any overlap.
Mostly just kid shit, like riding our bikes everywhere. And where we were is basically like next to a highway where there was a lake, maybe like a 15-minute walk. So we can ride our bikes to the lake in like 10 minutes. And there's like a whole bunch of us. So we would just do like a lot of kid shit, ride bikes. There's a sand pit too. So we would just like jump off sand pits and stuff like that and explore abandoned houses, just go looking through stuff in the woods, stuff like that.
You could say Sean's creativity was in his blood. I mean, both his parents are musicians, So naturally, a lot of those passions and skills passed down to him.
I was always kind of drawn towards art in general. I feel like it's the one thing that I was always compelled towards some kind of creation. I was like a pretty creative kid. When I was younger, I think I drew. I wasn't very good, but I was always just drawing or doodling. And then eventually I found writing. I think when I started reading, I just was like in love with the Harry Potter series and Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia and things like that. So I started writing like little mini fantasy stories. And looking back, they're all just kind of the amalgamation of all of those put together. But like I was really just, I loved outputting things. So when I was a kid, it was drawing and then writing. And then by the time I was like 13, I think my parents got me like a little secondhand guitar and I was playing music a bit. So my parents were also in bands and musicians as well. So being surrounded by that kind of energy definitely helps, I think.
While very creative and musically inclined, neither of his parents did that full time, always working full time jobs and setting aside time to have fun on the weekends.
So they would always be like playing gigs or they would be practicing or there'd be people over practicing. So it really was just kind of like a constant in the house. And even when they weren't practicing, the instruments were everywhere. So even as a kid, I would just kind of like mess around with somebody's drum set that they'd left or something, or like my dad's bass or his guitar or something, or I'd be singing in the car with my parents while we were driving somewhere. So just being surrounded by the creative energy was really good.
While in the art world, Sean is mostly known for his photography and digital art. He is also quite the musician. Like myself, he started to play the guitar young, but unlike me, he's actually very good at it. Maybe if my introduction to music was having cool musician parents instead of Guitar Hero, I would be some kind of rock star right now, but I'm much happier being a humble podcaster. So how'd you learn guitar? Did your dad teach you how to play or what'd you do?
Not really. No, I'm lucky enough. My dad is he's self-taught and he just has a very good ear. And I think I get that from him because I'm the kind of person that if you give me an instrument, I'll be able to write something with it or play something. I'm not great at playing other people's music, but I'm more interested in the act of making something new in the same way that, I don't think I'm a particularly amazing photographer. I think my concepts are pretty good and that, that's what I'm good at. I excel at coming up with the ideas and making new things rather than making something that might be best version of something. So if you told me I needed to learn a song, I could probably do it after some time, but I'm much better at coming up with ideas on the spot and like writing a song versus playing a song.
You know, I have to ask, did you join any bands or anything?
Like I was always tapping my fingers in class and I wouldn't be surprised if I had ADHD or something, but I had a lot of excess energy when I was a kid. And a few friends of mine in class noticed one day that I was just tapping. I was basically like playing a full like song with my fingers and the teachers would constantly be like, Sean, stop. And I wouldn't even realize I was doing it, but they'd be like, hey man, we need a drummer. You're like, you ever play drums? And I was like, no, I haven't. But then I played, I was like, oh, I can do this. Like I figured it out. So I played in a pop punk band for like a few years with some of my best friends. And then eventually I did some vocals for like a local metalcore band for like a year maybe. And then I realized that I don't really like working with bands. And so I just do everything alone now for music. Just too much, a lot of egos and a lot of pissing contests and stuff like that. So it's less about like actually writing the material and more about like corralling a bunch of musicians together, which can be really challenging, especially if you're all teenagers or in your early 20s when nobody has the foresight and the mental fortitude to actually just be like, okay, everybody, like, calm down. Let's just try to write this music.
You know what time of the episode it is. It's time to learn what exactly our guest is going to be trying to do with their life. We all have this moment in our journey where we have to decide what direction we're going to take. And that decision can feel pretty daunting in life to decide at such a young age what you're going to be doing forever. If you make the wrong decision, you have to restart. Maybe trying new things and seeing what clicks isn't wasting time at all. I've wanted to be a lot of things in life. Rock star, IT guy, artist, podcaster, writer. There's so many things I want to do, and there's so many things I still want to do. Other people dream of becoming more practical things, like doctors, lawyers, or even nurses like my wife is. Sean didn't want to do any of that, not even in the slightest. All he wanted to do was be creative somehow, some way.
I never had a career path other than doing something in art. There was never any field outside of art where I was actually drawn towards. I didn't really think of the actual like the money element of it. I just knew that I loved art and that I would do something in the art world. But yeah, there's no career, there's no field, nothing in STEM or anything like that where I was like, oh, that's interesting. I could do that when I'm older. So To this day, I still feel like a kid in a lot of ways, because I'm a lot of like basically what I'm doing is just the adult version of what a child would be doing. Like they're coming up with little doodles and stuff. But now I'm actually like taking that and trying to turn them into artworks and selling them and licensing them and using them on projects and stuff. So in a lot of ways, I feel like I've fed my inner child and they're very full. Like I really don't feel like an adult most days.
You know, we all get a lot of pushback from society when we say we want to be an artist for a living. But do you remember that moment you decided, nope, you know, I'm done trying to find something practical. I'm just going to follow this art, this passion.
I can't think of a specific moment, but I think it was really just the lack of any clear path in the real world, quote unquote, job sphere, like always kind of made me feel like I have to figure something out in art. It was like I knew I would be dead inside if I went to a normal 9-to-5 day job. And I've had day jobs and stuff, and that's how I felt. I just never cared enough about them. Every job I had, I was just there to get the paycheck. And then when I wasn't doing anything too serious at the job, my brain was immediately just on music and art. So I don't know. I didn't want to fight it too much. It just came naturally to me and it comes naturally to me. So the hardest thing now is to just kind of like rein in the parts of my brain that stop me from making art as good as it can be. But yeah, as a kid, it would have been a lot easier in a lot of ways if I had a career path. But I've just known what I wanted to do for a long time, or at least what world I wanted to live in. And for all I know, maybe I'd gotten into 3D earlier. Maybe that would have taken over the photos. Or maybe if I'd stuck with music, I'd be doing something in the music industry. But I just knew that I would probably not have a normal 9-to-5 job. And in doing that, you kind of accept that there's going to be a lot more fluctuations in your money and things like that. But I just know I don't want to die with the what if in the back of my head. So I'd rather just commit to art and try to figure something out along the way.
Sometimes that seemingly endless pursuit of being a working artist can wear you down to the point of wishing you had that steady structure of a 9-to-5.
Yeah, I mean, it was like, it's constant self-doubt for me, at least. I don't think there are very, very few days where I'm like, oh yeah, I'm killing it. This is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, I think I'm more naturally inclined towards it, but there are some days where I'm like, man, life would be a lot simpler if I did kind of just have like something outside of art that I was good at and I wanted to do that actually like paid.
Even with that self-doubt, his parents were still supporting him and giving him that push he needed to chase those dreams.
My parents were always very supportive. My dad, especially, he was always just kind of like, you'll never be at this point where you have the least amount of things going on. You might as well put everything you have. You have no debt, you have no children, and you have no like, there's really very few things holding you back. So just go, and like worst case scenario, you get a job later in life. Like that's the best thing. That's the best thing that could happen, or the worst thing that could happen. My mom was a bit more practical, where she naturally was like, but how are you going to make ends meet? You know, like this is one of the hardest industries to make money in, because there's no actual demand. This is purely just like a supply thing where it's like, I'm just going to make stuff and hope people like it. But they were both supportive in their own ways. And to this day, they're probably like my biggest cheerleaders.
And while he didn't feel like wasting his time chasing some degree he didn't even want, he did go to school.
I didn't go to art school necessarily, but I went to, I got a general degree in arts and culture. So it was kind of perfect, because at the time I was doing a bit of photography, but I wasn't like super sold on like, I'm going to be a photographer. That is the thing I'm doing. So I learned a bit about everything and had some classes in like printmaking, some classes in like digital stuff and other things like that. So it was like more of a rounded kind of education versus like a, we're going to teach you photography or we're going to teach you like sculpting or something. So going to that and going to school for that really just kind of cemented my feeling of like, okay, well, music and photos or music and visuals are the only two things that you kind of exceed at. So you're going to want to focus on those. And I think I was just burned out of the music stuff just because of working with so many bands. So now music is just something I do on my own, and I'd like to try to make it something bigger, but the visuals is just where I'm going now.
So let's go back in time a little bit. When exactly did you get introduced to photography?
I think it started first by getting like a little digital Polaroid camera for a school trip, probably when I was about 13 or 14. Then from there, I just started like taking photos with my parents' camera, just something like that they had around. I would just go like for walks into like cornfields when I was visiting my grandparents in Ontario or something, and just taking photos like that. And then I think when I was about 17 or 18, a buddy of mine had a DSLR. So I started messing with that. I was like, this is the kind of camera I want. This is cool. And figuring out how to actually change the settings and actually get the exact results I wanted. So yeah, I was about 14 to 17, I think.
Okay, how do I put this? Sean's photography isn't just taking pictures for high school graduations or weddings. His work focuses more on very surreal conceptual ideas he's cooked up in that brain of his, because like he said, it's much easier for him to come up with something brand new than doing what he'd seen a million times. But there's a hard part to making these very conceptual works, and it's the social anxiety of trying to do them in public.
By the time I was about 18, I started actually like bringing my camera with me everywhere, slowly starting to do more conceptual stuff. But I was super shy. I was super embarrassed of it, really. And I would go out into the woods alone, and the entire time I'm like, oh my God, people are going to think I'm so weird. They're going to walk by me and see just a guy alone with his camera and his tripod and doing like weird stuff. It's not like I'm just taking self-portraits. I'm like either shirtless with something over my head or things like that. So now I'm a lot better at it, where I realize most people don't really care. But at the first few years was really a lot of just me trying to get out of my own way. And even asking for help was a huge, like, I would be so stressed and so anxious about asking my friends for help. And then I would ask and they'd be like, yeah, like, why didn't you ask sooner? It's cool. Yeah, just a good example of how the mind is very powerful and we hold ourselves back so much.
It was then one day after seeing the film Inception that a new photo idea hit him, which would solidify his love for photography for good.
Probably when I was about, I think it would have been 18, because I made one image actually with the help of a friend of mine. It was just a concept that I came up with. It's kind of like a shifting of the perspective of a scene in Inception, the film, where just somebody, I think it's the scene where it's one of the opening scenes where somebody falls into a bathtub. And they shot it from the side, and I thought it would be really cool to shoot it from the top down just to see like the full on displacement of the water. And so a buddy of mine's parents had just sold their house, or they were fixing their house. And so they had an empty house and they had a tub inside that we pulled out, put in the backyard, and I got on the roof and shot from the roof and just got my buddy to fall into the tub over and over. And I got that photo, and to this day, I think that's the photo where I was like, damn, this is really good. Like, you made this. If you can make this, you can probably make some other really good stuff. You should stick with this. You should keep going. So I think it was that piece.
Okay, it's time to be a little more practical, he thought. So he went and he signed up for a commercial photography course.
Did do a course in commercial photography after, because I basically did my general arts degree. When I was feeling better about photography, I did a commercial photography program, but I dropped out after a year. So in the first year, I learned a few things, but I dropped it just because I felt like I wasn't getting enough out of it in terms of the time I was putting in. So I was working full-time at the bookstore at the school. And so I would literally go from working like 9 to 5 at the bookstore and then go home, eat dinner with my parents, and then go back to school where I did my night classes for like a year. And at the time I felt like I had an ego, because I was like, how are we learning this? Like, I feel like I learned, like, I can do this by myself. Like, I don't need to be in a classroom with people teaching this to me. And there were some things I learned here and there, but like 10% of the things I learned, I still apply today. Whereas 90% of it was just kind of like, I'm paying for this. What am I doing?
Maybe it was just that style of learning that didn't work for him. Because if you think back to even when he was a kid learning guitar, he was always more of a self-teacher.
But I think a lot of people also need certain environments to learn. A lot of people don't necessarily have the, a lot of people are better learners when they're shown something from someone who knows what they're doing versus going out and failing and trying. So for me, the best version of learning for me has always been to take a concept and go and try it and fail a bunch. And then that way, you know, going forward, okay, well, next time I need to think about what could go wrong. Next time I need to have a plan B. Like, if this doesn't work, like, come up with a different solution. And every concept is different. So every shoot is different. Whereas in the classroom environment, it just felt very sterile. And it was just I was also a commercial program. So I wasn't really into it, because a lot of the assignments would be very like, okay, we're going to make this really beautiful image, and I'm this like 19-year-old kid who's like super inspired and wants to make really weird, cool stuff, and I'm forced to make like headshots. So I was just I was not super stoked about that. And at the time, I was going to meetups in the United States, doing Flickr meetups with other photographers. So I would go from a week of living with like 20 other conceptual photographers, making weird photos, exploring abandoned places, and then when I'd come back home, I'm going to night class where I'm taking headshots. So just kind of like, this is the absolute killer of all of my inspiration. I need to leave.
You know what's actually really cool? Sean had met our previous podcast guest, Rob Woodcox, at some of these Flickr meetups as well. You know, what a small world. It's truly amazing how the internet can bring us together in such unique ways. Okay, so he's done with school, he quit that course, and he is focused on making his conceptual art. But how's he going to make money? So what was the plan? Was the plan to just do whatever job you could to pay the bills and just make your art on the side and try to get it out there?
Yeah, pretty much. My parents, again, were super supportive as well. So they let me stay with them as long as I had a job. So they were like, if you have a job, like, you can stay here as long as you want. I would work in like manual labor kind of jobs. I worked in a suit factory for like half a year. I worked in like an inventory and different businesses and things like that. So anything where I could easily get the job, I can go in, work, turn my brain off. And then as soon as I leave, I'm just like making art and working on the next project. So yeah, from like 20 to like 24, that's basically what I did. And then thankfully, when I was about 25, I got a job. A job that I had, which started as a manual labor thing. I was in the shipping department of a small company. They hired a photographer who was really terrible. So I managed to kind of coax my way into her position of working with her. And eventually she left for whatever reason. So then I became the photographer there. So I was actually like a full-time photographer, technically doing my own art on the side and then working for the small business.
Hey, anything close to your passion has to feel nice to be able to get paid to do it. But at this job, he was doing a lot simpler photos. He was doing photos of products and different advertising materials for this company's website. How did it feel for you to be able to make money doing photography? Even though it wasn't your art at the time, you were still making money doing photography.
Absolutely. Yeah, I was super stoked because before then I was just packing boxes and shipping orders and things like that and dealing with like invoices and things. So it was very boring and like not at all related to what I like to do. So at the very least, going from that to doing something that, hey, at the least I'm using my camera, at the least I'm using Photoshop. It might not be what I want to be doing, but it's like, it's degrees closer. It's like significantly closer to what I want to be doing. So I'll take it.
And could you tell me what that dream was for you?
My dream has been and is still to like make a sustainable living as an artist doing what I like to do. So every photo I'm taking there and every like hour long editing session I'm doing for one of their pieces was I wish I was doing my own stuff. I knew it was coming. It was just a matter of time. So it was just the building blocks and slowly growing and just learning how to take the hits.
Chan did this job many years, working his day job and doing his own art on the side. The side art was actually making some good money, you know, licensing his work out for things like album covers. He was also doing prints and other stuff. As time went on, those day job hours began to dwindle and dwindle, till one day he was sadly laid off. But no worries, don't get too sad. Sean's a pretty conservative guy, always making sure to save and invest responsibly. And he knew that his only real option now was to finally give that full-time artist thing a real go. You're now into a year of being a full-time artist. Looking back now, do you wish you would have made that leap sooner? Are you glad you stayed?
I'm a pretty conservative person when it comes to like taking financial risks and stuff. So for me, I definitely think if I had left sooner, it probably wouldn't have been the right choice. But also, for all I know, maybe at that time, it would have been the perfect kick in the ass that I needed. Whereas now, being in it for a year, like it's definitely very stressful. It's definitely like, You're your own boss in every sense of the word. So if you are not super disciplined, like you just don't get money. So, and also with the nature of what we do, there's no guarantee in anything. So if there's no guarantee, that means you need to be putting out something somewhat consistently at least. So it's been an interesting struggle. Cause when you want something and then when you get it, it's very different. So if you don't have like the mental fortitude and the discipline and stuff like that, like you are the issue. It's no longer your environment. The only thing left is you. And that's probably been the thing I've been struggling with the most. And I'm a very anxious person. I'm a very, like, I stress over things easily. So even just learning Blender has been super stressful because every time I'm doing it, I'm like, man, why aren't I just shooting photos? This is a waste of time. It's hard for me to see the long-term picture and to see the investments that are going into what will hopefully be like a long career. So it's been a good experience, but it's been very stressful, especially money-wise.
Being self-employed sounds wonderful, right? I mean, believe me, it sure is, but holy cow, is it hard. Forget the normal stuff about the inconsistent money and the stress that comes with that. But when you work from home and you're self-employed, there's no real distinction between work time and personal time. You could always be doing more, and with an endless list of tasks, it can become very overwhelming, and I can relate greatly to this feeling with Sean. This podcast takes me over 30 hours to make each episode, and that's on top of every other bit of work I have to accomplish. So tell me more about how it feels to be self-employed.
I think there are days where I'm stressed, but then there's also days where I'm just like really glad that I don't feel like my soul is being sucked from my body kind of thing. Like I'm not stuck somewhere where I hate. I get to be home with my girlfriend and our new cat. So I just chill at home and I'm working on projects. And I have a lot of other friends who are also freelancers and artists. So it's like a communal experience for a lot of us. And I've got different gigs coming in, and it's interesting. It's fun. You know, it makes for an interesting life. And there are obviously pitfalls with that, whereas like the financial stability is not there compared to like a 9-to-5. But in a lot of ways, it's a learning experience, and you get to know yourself in a way that I don't think you can at a day job or something like that. Because ultimately, when you have to be accountable to somebody else, that will make you move a certain way. If you're only accountable to yourself, that's where you really get to like know who you are as a person. And that's been very eye-opening for me, because obviously when you think like, oh, when I'm working alone as a photographer, or when I have my own business and doing my own thing, I'll be doing X, Y, Z. It's like, it's one thing when you have a job and you're thinking like that. It's very different than when you're actually in the role and you're doing it. You're really in the ring by yourself, and your opponent is yourself. So that's the tricky part, is you're standing in your own way most of the time.
Life is going to throw so many freaking curveballs your way, and you won't hit every single one of them. You're going to have to take your time and focus and learn what you must do to adapt. And our guest, Sean, well, he's pretty good at adapting. Your photography, you know, it's not just point and shoot. There's so many edits that go into making these works, as grand as they are. When did these heavy edits and Photoshop work, when did all that start coming into the creative process for you?
I think once the concepts called for it, really, is when I started doing those kinds of edits. So if the concept called for like 50 people in a scene, especially when I was starting out, the idea of getting 50 people together for a photo shoot was super stressful. So I was like, okay, well, I guess I'm just going to use myself and like cut myself out in Photoshop and put it a bunch of different times. The ideas were always what led the approach, really. If I had an idea like that where I would need a bunch of people, or if I knew I had an idea in the future, where I was like, how would I do this? I say, okay, well, I guess I have to do some compositing. I have to combine these kinds of images and scenes together. So I really just let the concepts kind of direct the approach. I'm not too firm in my process in that sense, where there are some images and some concepts where I'm like, all right, well, I guess I have to shoot this in a pool. And then if I did want to do some compositing, how would I do that? Okay, think about it that way. It's really just a lot of problem solving and like logistical issues more than anything, which can be very creative and interesting. But like when you're not actually doing the actual shooting and the process of it, it feels really like checklist of like, okay, well, if this, then this, and then okay, well, if that, then that. So that's probably the most sterile version of the creative process, but it's really important, because that's where all the troubleshooting happens before you even touch your camera, before you even like get anywhere near to asking people for help. You have to figure out how to do it. So that's where Photoshop comes in handy.
He loves taking pictures, he loves the edits, but it's all this planning and logisticals that start to become a real problem.
Yeah. The actual shooting of it. And like, once I understand like, oh, this will work, I know this will work, or at the very least it will come close to working, then it's fun. Then it's kind of cool. But it's the in-between where you're like, God damn, how does this work? Like, where do I find this? Like it's literally just a series of questions that you need to have answered before you even like try to shoot it. Otherwise you're wasting your time, you're wasting money, you're wasting other people's time, you're potentially wasting resources. So, yeah.
I've never thought of this, and I don't know why, but, you know, as a photographer like Sean, you're heavily restricted by the seasons. Imagine coming up with a great idea for a new work, but you can't even begin to shoot it until about a year later because, say, you're in fall and you need to shoot it in the summer. So, for a way for him to flex his creative brain even more, Sean started to adapt once again and stepped his feet beyond the realm of Photoshop and into the world of 3D rendering. So what pushed you to start trying out Blender and making 3D artworks?
For the versatility of it, I just seen so many amazing artists working in 3D. And then once I realized that there's a free software where I can get maybe similar results if I practice for a long time, I was definitely sold, but it's incredibly intimidating. But yeah, for me, it was really just to give myself another option, in the same way that maybe In the same way as like when you travel, you have access to different locations and different climates, different atmospheres. In Blender and with 3D as well, you're basically world building. And in a lot of the images that I make, I feel like God. Like I'm really like just like making the scene, making the world. And in Blender, you feel the most like God. You feel like the most like the person just pulling the strings. And so if you get good enough in Blender, you can basically make any scene, any situation. And a lot of my images call for very unique circumstances and very unique locations where like, where am I going to find this exact thing in the world? Oof, I'm going to have to spend days location scouting, or I'm going to have to know of an exact place and then go in the right time of the season, the right time of the year. What are the odds of me being able to do that? Probably pretty slim. Whereas enter Blender, I just want to slide it into my pipeline seamlessly. So if I can go to a location, absolutely, I'll go to a location. But if I need to use Blender, it's there and available. That's the idea mostly.
The digital world allows you to take all these real life restrictions away, and you're able to fully build any scene you can dream up. And this continues to enhance his works even further.
I already do so much work digitally that, like, yes, all of the material that I'm using starts from a photo, but it's just an arbitrary line. Like being like, oh, well, I don't do 3D. It's like, well, why not? Like if you can literally, because for example, I did a piece recently back in October where I needed a tree in the middle of a field. And I was like, well, where am I going to find this tree in the middle of a field? It's like, okay, well, instead of trying to find the location, why don't you just find an image of a tree, like a stock image of a tree, and then like build the scene that way in Photoshop. And if I'm already building every single asset like artificially in Photoshop from photos, like what's really the difference between that and working in Blender? Like there's not much of a difference. This didn't exist in the real world. I was just documenting it with a camera. Now I can just render it from a scene in Blender.
As his works have grown over the years, so has his ways of monetizing his art. First, it was doing the standard thing most photographers do, and that's sell prints. Then he started to do things like license his works out to countless bands for their album covers. And more recently, he has dipped his toes into the NFT world, which proved to be one of the most accessible and flexible ways for him to stay a full-time artist. So how did you get started in the whole NFT thing?
I had a few friends who were doing NFT stuff. I was only really seeing 3D at the time in it. I was like, oh, that's cool. But I guess like, you know, it's not for photographers. It's only for 3D stuff. But then a buddy of mine, Nate Hill, who's a very good photographer and digital artist as well. He was like, hey man, like, I think your art would be really cool if it was in this kind of world, if it was in this sphere, you should join. And so he onboarded me and I learned everything about it. And since about like early 2021, late 2020, I've been doing a little bit of crypto stuff here and there and making NFTs and things like that. And it's definitely helped. Like it's surprising that you wouldn't think like, oh, who's investing in it? Who's buying this kind of stuff? But like there's a smaller but more dedicated pool of collectors and buyers there, I'd say, than like in the general public buying art. Because most people just buy art like on a whim, whereas these people are like in the world of it, if that makes sense. Like they're a constant, they're like a presence in this space, and it's like a weird intersection of tech and money and crypto.
And those dedicated collectors he's talking about really came to support him.
I mean, yeah, it's been like all of my biggest sales have been in NFTs. So like I've made decent money selling prints and through galleries and independently. But even in like the last 3 years, I'd say the most money I've made has been in NFTs, and licensing and stuff is very good. It's a bit more consistent. There, like I said, there's a more dedicated but smaller pool of patrons for art in that world, I'd say.
Finding his success in this competitive art world has not been easy, but his style has already begun to make an impact on those younger. To be an artist, to be self-employed, is an everyday challenge that is far from easy. Even with such hard work, it takes a lot of luck, and Sean recognizes this amazing opportunity he has been given.
Like people would love to be in your position where you're like, I'm chasing my dreams. Like most people don't get that opportunity, or most people don't have the foresight or the luck and the gift to like kind of know what they want to do. So if you're given those cards, like you need to run with them, because like that's, for all you know, maybe that feeling leaves, maybe you lose that passion and then you don't know what to do. And that's not a great place to be in either. But also, you know, like that's where a lot of growth happens. So in a lot of ways, doing what you love is really cool. But if you feel like you're stuck in one lane, that's where you can really kind of get into some dangerous territory, where the thing you love and have a lot of passion for becomes a thing you slowly start to like develop these negative feelings towards.
The next thing Sean said to me really hit home. He talked about how sometimes people don't even try to start chasing their dreams. And I look back the last couple of years of my life, and I was struggling and overwhelmed, stressed with responsibilities of owning a home and starting a family, and I wanted to try this podcast, but unsure if I could even make it happen. It took me 2 years to even make the first episode, but once I got that ball rolling, I couldn't stop. And we all have to start somewhere, right? Even if it's not perfect.
There's a part of me that thinks it's kind of selfish to just pursue art and to do the thing you want to do. But also, I think that's just me realizing that a lot of people wish that they could do what they love doing, and that it's a very rare gift to be able to pursue the thing you love. Even if you're unsuccessful at it, most people don't even take the first steps. Most people don't even enter the ring. You know, they're watching other people like doing the thing. So to even have the ability to be trying is a gift. So it's really hard to not feel like I'm just a very selfish person who's chasing their dreams and being a kid or whatever. But at the same time, like, you get one life, so I'd rather do that and try to do the thing that I think will be really cool than to play it safe and get a job that I know will pay well, but in the back of my head, I'll probably hate myself and I'll hate what I've become. So
he has had that taste of the artist's life, and he couldn't imagine living any other way.
When things go really well, when you're working for yourself and either making art or as a business in general, once you have a taste of that, I feel like it's very hard to hang that up and to go back to like only working a day job and only being told what to do by someone else, because ultimately you have a bunch of mini bosses when you are your own business. That's the funniest thing is when people are like, I want to be my own boss and like, I'll do this and that. It's like, you're basically at the whim of like all of your clients and stuff like that when you are a contractor or if you're independent in any way. So it's not like a cakewalk by any means, but even then, I think when you've got a taste of that, like not having that in your life anymore would feel very empty.
While the idea of being an independent artist seems to be fun and fantasy, it's so much more when it really happens. But nonetheless, it's something very special when you're able to support yourself purely off your imagination. You know, I've been a fan of Sean's work for a long time now. He was the very first person I ever interviewed for my blog, and he was on the actual old style of the podcast twice. And I just couldn't believe that he took the time to come back on and retell me his whole story once again for a third time. I couldn't be happier to see how far he has come since our first time chatting in 2017, and I cannot wait to see where he goes next and how he will adapt to whatever comes his way. Thank you, every single one of you, who took the time to listen to this show. We're almost at that 2-year mark for when I upload the first episode, and I can't believe it. If you gain any inspiration from this show, please tell everyone you know to go listen. Maybe steal their phone, follow the podcast on their forum. I'm also very proud to say we have a few amazing prints available on our website for sale right now with previous podcast guests and so many more of my art friends. We got a lot of the other prints coming this year, so head on over to MyArtDrill.com if you want to support the print to help support me and support the artist. You can also support the show directly by signing up to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MyArtDrill. Thank you. And I will see you in the next episode.